Emily Elizabeth, and I'm the host of the What Fulfills You podcast, a show for and about individuals always seeking to be their best selves. On this show, we talk all about building the mindset, finding the right careers, creating meaningful relationships, and so much more. Welcome to the What Fulfills You podcast. Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the What Fulfills You podcast. My name is Emily Elizabeth. I'm your host. And for today's conversation, I am focusing on entrepreneurship and business and a lot of thought-provoking topics, to be honest. And in this conversation, I have on Abraham Casillas, who you guys might catch the hint on who he is on this podcast, but we dive into a little bit of our own journeys. I really wanted to approach the conversation by taking it back to our early entrepreneurial days and how it has led us to where we're at now. And when I craft these kind of conversations, I always think about what would have benefited a younger version of myself when I'm thinking about maybe diving into entrepreneurship, or when I'm thinking about the things I should be mindful about or aware of when it comes to getting into business. So if you're listening right now, and maybe you're typically more of a listener focused on wellness or the self-care aspects or personal development and friendships and relationships, I do think there are some interesting takes on this episode that you may also find helpful and intriguing. So I think nonetheless, if you're a deep thinker, you're gonna enjoy this conversation. So with that being said, let's welcome Abraham to the podcast. Abe Casillas, welcome to the official version of the podcast. For those of you guys who don't know, we actually attempted to do a...
Twice.
Yeah, so we did this in Medellin maybe like a month ago. Mm-hmm. And just kind of decided we wanted to do this a little bit more formally. So today we are diving into business building insights. I feel like that's a fun topic for both of us as entrepreneurs. And something I get asked a lot about from girls who are just starting out, like freelancing and just kind of dabbling in starting something for themselves. But for me, it's more fun to kind of go back and forth with someone that's also been on that journey. And there's like a lot of similarities and also a lot of differences. So why don't we start from the beginning? What was your very first business? And you could even preface it with like the small things that kind of indicated you were going to go towards entrepreneurship path, maybe from childhood years, anything that you did that kind of hinted at that.
Yeah, I think entrepreneurs would have noticed they tend to have passion projects that they get deeply sucked into. And for me, that was the case. And there was many of these. In the beginning, I think when I was 12 years old, I think every guy goes through a magic phase. And I had my own magic phase, but again, I got sucked super deep into it. So much so that I started getting invited to churches and coffee shops and the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts to do magic shows for them.
Mm.
You know, and I think that was probably the first time that I noticed there is something here.
Yeah.
And and I was doing them for free.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I did this coffee shop, and at the end, the coffee shop owner handed me a $100 bill. And I was like, oh, I can get paid to do stuff that I love.
Mm.
And as I got older, I kept getting pulled into things. And one of those was photography. The other one was building websites.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it always started as this is an interest of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I would get so pulled into it, and it would be easy to spend hours, stay up till 2-3 in the morning,
mm-hmm.
working on something, building a computer, learning how to build websites. And then you realize there are people that need this.
Mm-hmm.
So growing up, I started many of these quote unquote businesses, which 90% of them didn't make money,
mm-hmm.
you know, but while there was no revenue growth,
mm-hmm.
Not monetary growth, there was a lot of unseen growth that was happening behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. You know, I was developing a ton of skills that later in the road, when I became older and started my first serious business, mm-hmm. led to me actually being able to make that successful.
So what was your first serious business?
I would say my first serious business was a business that made zero money. And it was before I got into what I'm doing today. I was in the tech field. Mm-hmm. And I had a bunch of certifications. I knew how to fix computers, how to set up networks, how to do all of this stuff. And I started AC Solutions, which was a tech company where I would provide these services. And I knew how to do the thing, but back then I didn't know how to market. And that was like the first business where I was like, I'm going to try to actually get clients and make this successful. And that lasted about a year before I realized I'm not really into tech. And the reason I was doing tech was because it was a safe career path. You mm-hmm. know, easy, six figures, multi-six figures coming out of college, high demand. And I chose that based off of that. And
Based off the money.
Based off the security.
Okay, security.
Yeah, which money is just something that adds to that. And I think a lot of people make decisions based off security.
Right.
But that was the first serious business that I started that didn't really lead anywhere. Mm-hmm. Now, the one that followed that one was the one that actually took off.
Trend Digital. It's interesting when I learned about how you started Trend Digital. You mentioned that you learned from watching or like from a course, right? Mm-hmm. On like how to start an agency.
Yeah.
While, at least for my agency, which is not my first business, but my agency, I started just through gathering all the skills I've learned over the years from selling skating dresses to, you know, working in a corporate sales job and actually working for a small boutique agency. I took all of those and was like, all right, Emily's going to do it her own way. Looking back though, do you feel like you could have done it without the course, or do you think if you were to start again, you would still have learned directly in that way?
So the course gave me the technical skill to be able to do the thing that I was selling, mm-hmm. which for anybody listening or watching, it was running Facebook ads for mm-hmm. local businesses. I mean, the story of people starting a business by buying a course is super common these mm-hmm. days, but most courses will teach you that. The skill and very, very basic business skills. So I had the skill and now it was time to go out and sell it. And that's when learning business kind of came into play. I could have probably learned how to run Facebook ads, watching YouTube videos, but the reason people buy courses and a lot of times what a course sells is speed, right? It's like, here's what you need to know to be able to do this thing for this industry, mm-hmm. right? And you're able to consume that in a weekend, in a week, in a month, rather than having to go browse the web for all the information that you need. Now, did the course give me everything I needed? No. And that's where the journey kind of started bringing, or as I embarked on this journey, I started attracting mentors that, and looking back and connecting the dots, it was very magical. It started to give me all the different skills that I needed to be able to make this happen. And it's actually a beautiful, beautiful story that I could dive into. There are basic business fundamentals that every business needs in order to be able to operate, right? You could boil it down to first principles. You need something of value to sell. Something you need to be able to market this thing. You need to learn how to sell it. And you need to know how to fulfill it, mm-hmm. right? Like, and you can boil down any business into these four fundamentals. And while the course gave me the skill, I had no idea how to market myself. I had no idea how to sell. But back then I was living in a very small town. And once I had that skill, I went out and I started contacting a lot of different businesses. And that's when I learned what people mean when they say it takes a village. Mm-hmm. Because as people saw me, a young 21-year-old trying to break into the business space in Reading, Pennsylvania, they started giving me a hand, you know, and I remember when I was looking for business, I would go on Craigslist and I would go look for gigs. And that was how I was trying to get clients. And it really wasn't that successful. But one day while I was browsing Craigslist, I came across an ad of a guy that was looking for an apprentice. And he was somebody that had been in the marketing industry for close to 40 years. And while the course taught me how to run Facebook ads, this guy taught me what marketing is, how to market. And he poured so much into me for absolutely free. And he took me under his wing. And that was great because now I knew how to generate interest. But I was struggling with the next part of the process, which is I was talking with business owners and I was trying to sell them my services, but nobody was buying. And around this time, I remember I was going to 10X Growth Conference and I joined a group and some dude messages me. It's this 45-year-old profile picture, suit and tie, looks super serious. And he's like, hey, I see that you're going to this event. We live in the same city. Why don't we grab lunch? So we, I'm like, sure. We go to lunch and he's a seasoned business owner in the area, very well known. And in that same meeting, he says, hey, I'm interested in your services. Sell me your services. So I, in the moment, I gave him my pitch and he's like, wow, you suck at selling.
He said that.
He said that. But it was beautiful because then after that meeting, he took me under his wing. And he would take me to meetings to sell with him and he would show me how to structure deals, right? And it's like, I didn't ask for this. But it was what I needed. And that in that moment, he taught me how to network. He taught me how to go shake hands and kiss babies and how to develop rapport with people and how to show them that I could actually help them. And I have many of these stories, but those two mentors really stand out at that point in time because they gave me two very valuable skills that I needed that would also later on lead to me building what I, my current business. You know, and in a way, passing those skills down to people, which is what I call the fundamentals. Because I think when people are getting to the business space, they say, oh, like I need this course and I need this other thing, right? And they're trying to focus on all of these fancy, shiny object syndromes, thinking that there is a magic pill when they don't even have the fundamentals down. They don't have a good product. They don't know how to market it and they don't know how to sell it. So, it's beautiful looking back on how those mentors came into my life and gave me the thing that I needed at that point in time.
And see, I like that you shared that because I think, and I can say this from personal experience, I told you, for me, my learning curve was at my corporate job because I had, it was a sales job specifically. So I had a lot of hands-on experience with all of that from rapport building. I mean, my final interview, there's four rounds of interviews to get the job. My final interview was a role play of, you know, prospect and client, or I'm sorry, like you're pitching to a prospect, prospective client. And obviously I you know, they're testing you, right? It's similar to that first instance. He's like, all right, pitch me your services, right? So I'm doing that the first time. And then from there, I'm getting feedback. And from there, I'm learning, like, you know, who to shake hands with, who, how to get past, like, the gatekeeper, all of these different things, which has carried on significantly in my current business. But it's fascinating to me. Obviously, a lot of us, both of us, we talk and work with a lot of young entrepreneurs. And I do see this tendency to kind of believe that, you know, like, you can just get into it right away. You know, and I think not many people have the opportunity to really dive into like the backstory of like where everything begins, because wouldn't you say like without that, you wouldn't be able to do your current business to the extent that it is today without those, like the learning curve, without those mentors, without the people actually teaching you and for you to go through that trial and error process?
Of course. I would not be here. And there's a part of me that is kind of glad that when people are telling you to start a business, that in the beginning, you have this ignorance about the journey that you're about to take and how long that growth curve is. Because I feel like once you're on that ride, it's very hard to get off and you'll take that ride. A lot of people don't, but if you're have that entrepreneurial DNA, like you'll go through it. But I feel if people knew what it actually takes, a lot of them probably wouldn't take on that journey. And there's actually something relevant because I was having a conversation with a group coaching call with Mind Community, and we were talking about this idea mm-hmm. of most people that get into business deeply underestimate the level it takes. Level it takes to launch the product, to create something, to sell, to deliver, to grow a business. You know, and I think they approach it with, especially the younger generation, a sense of entitlement.
Uh-huh. Oh, like, yeah.
Why am I not getting this? Why is this not working?
Yeah.
Well, like, you're not playing at that level.
Yeah.
You know, and as a competitive athlete, you know that the court, when it comes to tennis, mm-hmm. like, it doesn't lie. Like, if you don't play at that level, you're going to lose.
And yeah.
Business is no different.
And it's funny, quick tangent too. It's funny how yesterday morning we were playing at 6 a.m. and I saw this girl walk by. Just by the way she walked, do you remember that? I was like, she played D1. And you're like, how do you know? And then even when she turned, I saw the side of her Nike leggings. It said her D1 school. It was SMU. And I'm like, yeah. Like, I could just tell because her physique was built as a D1 player. I mean, I even was like, she could probably definitely kill me on the court. You know, but it's funny because that was like that in skating too. That's why I'm so familiar with that, where like, she doesn't have to even, she could walk with one racket. I think she actually walked with two rackets handheld. And I was like, yeah, she's former D1 player. But to me, I think that's a lot in business too. And that's why it's really easy to spot people who are, whether it's on social media or just like trying to start, and they're like maybe usually really young, with that sense of entitlement or with the sense of like, yeah, I can make 10K a month, or I can do this, right? Or I can charge this for my services. To your point, it's actually funny, you know, I run a social media agency, and one part of the services is doing influencer partnerships for these luxury hotels. And I get a lot of DMs from influencers, creators, DJs, whoever, who have over 100,000 followers, and their pitches suck ass. And that's actually had me thinking for months now. I was like, should I create a course on how to fucking pitch yourself formally? Because even for me, I trash the email. I'm like, they literally start, 90% of them start with, you know, hey, I have 420,000 followers. I'm like, cool, right? And how many followers do I have, and how many hotels did I get in Paris, right? And so it's funny because speaking on that side, I actually only was able to get those Paris hotels and Columbia hotels and wherever I've been because of the business formality. The way I pitch to hotels and whatever partners I want, it's a very, this is what I'm offering, and this is what's in it for you. It's an immediate offer with no ask, no brag. And I even had conversations with hotel owners and hotel directors, and they'll come to me because they'll get the email sometimes. Sometimes, like, these influencers will say, fuck the DMs, I'm going to email, like, the normal, like, front desk email. So the hotel directors will get it, and they're like, these people are so entitled. They're like, who do you think you are with 400,000 followers, think you can stay at my place, my hotel, for four nights for free, right? And they're coming to me to vent about it. I'm like, hey, it's true. But certain creators do have good value add. Here are examples, but I agree that pitch sucks, very entitled, and it's very hard to want to work with them. You know, I think it's kind of the same thing with any entrepreneur in their first few years who think like, oh, like, I don't need you, or are in this mindset of, you know, okay, why is it not happening yet? You know, like, why am I not making 10K a month consistently? You know, I feel like you see that a lot though in your community, not a lot in a bad way, but in a sense of you are a more seasoned entrepreneur than someone who's 24 and has 3 years in. What are your thoughts on people who are maybe a couple years into business and coming across these frequent frustrations of, you know, why is it not at this pace yet? Or why is so-and-so doing better? Or why is no one responding to my emails when I'm, you know, prospecting, whatever?
Yeah, I love this question. To me, that often comes from them drinking the Kool-Aid uh-huh. on the internet, you know?
Yeah.
And that being marketing messages
mm-hmm.
that are selling you on quick and easy.
Mm.
Highlight reels
yeah.
that are just that. And people showing you the tip of the iceberg of what it took to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Showing you the best parts of their life. And not showing you what it took, you know? And I think comparison mm-hmm. is also something that often I notice is the thing that leads people yes. into this space of feeling like, oh man, I am not there yet.
Yes.
I should be there. Why am I not there yet?
Mm-hmm.
Not understanding that their journey is unique.
Mm-hmm.
Not understanding that their journey is also going to look different. Just because it happened in a certain way for a certain person doesn't mean it's going to happen in that way for
right,
you.
Right.
And I think taking a look at somebody else's plate is often the thing that leads people into that headspace,
mm-hmm.
you know? And for me, a big part of what I do as a business coach that prides himself in operating from a place of integrity is not selling people on, hey, you're going to be able to build a seven-figure business in three months, you know, and it's going to be easy.
Yeah.
And all you got to do is pay me X amount of money. But you see it all the time. I mean, if you scroll on Instagram,
yeah.
you get bombarded with this ads over and over and over and over again.
Right.
Right. And people think like, oh, this is possible. Right. And what every marketing guru is selling you on is this magic pill.
Mm.
And the belief that there is a magic pill that's going to lead to quick success
mm-hmm.
is what also leads people to feeling like they're wrong to be where they're currently at and that they're wrong for their journey taking as long as it needs to. A common theme that we've had in conversations recently is we see an entrepreneur and we go into the backstory and we see, oh, it's been 12 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now they're breaking through. It's happened like 3 or 4 times in the past week where we do the research on who the person is and when they started the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 10, 12, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like they broke through out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Little do we know that they've been hacking away for years.
At yeah. Once. Yeah. It makes me think, too, when you're talking about we're comparing or looking at another person's profile or looking at another person's business or looking at another person's revenue. My favorite quote I heard when in 2017, this was really impactful. And, like, the way I remember this in detail is shows how impactful it was. I was on a flight back from PA to California, where I was living at the time. I was 2017. So it was a junior in college. And I was, I think, maybe 2 months into more or less getting my personal shit together. And I was listening to this podcast. The guest was Lauren Bostic. And she was talking about a quote that she heard about athletes and their level of focus and staying in their lane. And she mentioned the quote that someone else said, which was around how Michael Phelps, when he's swimming, he doesn't look in the next lane to see how close his competitor is. Because for Olympic fanatics like myself, you know that the difference between gold and silver in swimming Olympics is often 1/10 of a second. 1/10 of a second. And Michael Phelps has that many gold medals in part because he does not check how close his competitor is. He has not checked how close, you know, second place is. And to me, that became so significant. I think, again, coming from an athlete perspective, because as a figure skater, I used tennis as well. I used to come into tournaments and would compare, like, I would look at the girls, like, seeded number one. I would look at her previous matches, who she beat, who she didn't beat, if I beat that person before, you know, stuff like that. And, man, I did not have the mental capacity to not compare, which is something I ended up fixing myself despite having, an Olympic-level mindset coach, all this stuff. And skating, too, I would look at, like, oh, who's in my group in this upcoming competition? I'd be like, oh, like, what's her average score? It was just fucking ridiculous. And when I heard that, I was like, yeah, like, had I done that, I would have done better in skating. But that's what I carry over today. That's why I have these tendencies where I genuinely don't look anymore because I've outgrown it. But I can't say that when I was 20. When I was 20 or 21, I was still like kind of comparing and looking over. But now I recognize that the more I look, the slower I go. Kind of like the game we played yesterday. like the little pain. but just like in the game, it's just, long story short, it slows you down in the process. And I kind of see that too when people are looking at, you know, what Joe and Sally are doing. What's like the keeping up with the Joneses, you know? It's like, I think there's a parallel in everything in life when you continue to compare your relationship or your business success or, you know, your physique or whatever. It really slows you down because your energy is so focused on that.
There's a beautiful parallel there to the creator space because being in this space and coaching creators, I've noticed that aspiring creators often, rather than tuning in to find out what their voice sounds like, what their content should look like, and I even fell into this, what they tend to do is they tend to look at the other lanes and they tend to look at people who are doing it. And rather than allowing themselves to be inspired by that person, they start copying what that person is doing. And it never works. It never works because it's not you. It's not authentic. And you're not playing in your own energy. And that's what makes creators magnetic. Yeah, you're not a one-on-one. And you'll never beat someone else at their game. That's their game. And I think like that analogy of staying in your lane, honoring your journey, honoring your energy is the thing that will lead to that rapid success. But I think often, and I wish it wasn't this way, and I love that we're talking about this because hopefully we're able to shave off a couple of years of someone else's journey. But I feel like often people have to go down that route and they have to realize that like, oh, like this is not the way to do it. This doesn't feel right. This doesn't work. And funny enough, the moment that you come back to you, the moment you start honoring your energy, amplifying your voice, living out and expressing your truth in the creator space, it's the moment people start paying attention.
What was your biggest lesson that you had as a takeaway with Trend Digital that you feel like is a type of lesson that you can't just skip over? Something that maybe is a parallel to a general lesson that a lot of entrepreneurs will have to learn the hard way. Is there anything that comes to mind with your biggest lesson / takeaway from Trend Digital? Your first, I guess, money-making business?
Trend Digital grew tremendously through referrals. And the only reason I got referrals was because I did exceptionally good work for my clients. And I went above and beyond. And I did things that no other agency was doing. A level of customization in their campaigns that you could only achieve by bringing a team in-house. And I was delivering that as an agency service. And that cut into my profit margins. That cut into, in a way, my ability to scale. It taxed my team. Because it took a lot of time. But doing what doesn't scale is what allowed me to scale, you know?
Like a little catch-22.
I'm blanking on his name. He's the founder of Y Combinator. But he has a blog, and he coaches like all of these like high level entrepreneurs. And he has a great blog post called "Do What Doesn't Scale." Highly recommend that everybody goes and reads it because all of these companies, Uber, Airbnb, Dropbox, early on, right now you see them as an application. Early on, how they got off the ground was doing stuff that never scaled. Emailing customers one by one, asking for feedback, getting on calls. Things that like don't really make sense on paper.
Customer service side.
So for me, it was doing what doesn't scale, but with a focus on providing such exceptional service to my clients that they felt stupid not to refer me to their colleagues because they knew that by referring me, they would be doing that person a favor. And for me, learning that early on and seeing the power of that, it's something that I've taken into every other business. You know, I see this in the opposite of this in the online space all the time.
Yeah.
Where an entrepreneur doesn't understand the level it takes.
Yeah.
And they'll create a product and or a service and they'll half-ass it and they'll take it to market.
Mm-hmm.
And in the beginning, you get lucky.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get some sales.
Mm-hmm.
But people will cancel. People mm-hmm. won't refer you.
Mm-hmm.
People will talk about you. People will spread the word about the fact that you're somebody that doesn't deliver. And while in the beginning you think like oh, I'm winning. This is easy, right?
Right.
I'm almost like, oh, like this is all it takes. It comes back and it bites you, you know? Yeah. And sometimes like, that's a tough lesson that people need to learn. But for me, that's the main thing. And I mean, that's the basis of any good business.
Yeah. You know? I had a very similar takeaway. I actually initially heard that she was originally from Japan, but she was on Tim Ferriss's podcast. I was listening to this, funny enough, driving home, I think from a club in California. I wasn't drinking, so I was just driving. But anyways, I share that because it's funny. I was staying awake by listening to a very informative podcast. And it's like maybe, I don't know, midnight, I'm driving home and I'm listening to her. And I just remember specifically, she was talking about how her father taught her to do everything with exceptional level and exceptional effort. Even if you're getting the coffee for, you know, the CEO or you are stacking the papers or whatever, you must do it with exceptional effort. And I really took that to heart when my first business was Elite Skatewear, and it still runs in the background. But the reason why that was also good, similar to you, is because it was just all referral. You know, I mean, it's a very niche business. So I didn't need to do the things that I do for Lost Hat and my agency. But the only reason why people returned, and which is why the business actually is still alive, is everything is actually just reorders or returning customers. And of course, people find us through social media. I was kind of ahead of the game on that one because I'm a young Gen Z, millennial, whatever. And I was doing this when I was 20. So this is like 6-7 years ago when what a mom and pop shop or, you know, a more corporate dressmaker, you know, they're not using social media to get to the skaters. And so I was being very strategic with it. But I think same thing with my agency today. 80%, 90% of my business came from referrals. And it's one of those things where I noticed too on the influencer side as a creator, if you work with brands, whoever handles the brand partnerships, they really do talk to other brand managers that handle like influencer, PR, everything like that. They will talk to one another if someone sucks at a collaboration or, you know, if an influencer, you know, was very half-assing the partnership and they got paid $2,000 to do the campaign, you know, people talk. And I think that's something that I've noticed is carried frequently in the young influencer, entrepreneur, creator industry as a whole. Like this level of, oh, I don't need to do it at this level because look at all the abundance I have on the internet, you know? But it's funny because it catches up to you.
The guy
that
wrote that article.
Yeah.
His name is Paul Graham. The reason to bring him back is because as
soon as... He wrote which article?
The Do What Doesn't
Scale. Oh, okay, article. Okay.
And the reason I bring him up is because as soon as I stopped looking for that thing, it came to me. And I think this is a beautiful parallel. It's a bit of a different conversation that we were diving into yesterday. And is when you're chasing the thing, it runs away from you.
Yeah.
You know, and when you shared what you shared around Elite Skatewear and where I picture you when you were building that business, it reminds me of where I was when I was building my first business, and it very much feels like play. And you're so excited about every little thing.
Yeah.
That doing the thing is its own reward. Yes, you're pursuing money, right? And the goal of any business is to make a profit.
Yeah.
Right? Make and keep a customer. But it's like that's almost something that happens as a byproduct.
Yes.
Of you doing the thing.
Yes.
And since we're having this whole conversation around career advice and entrepreneurship, one of the things that I've noticed that trips up most people is going after the thing. And there's a beautiful story about an archer, and he's at an archery competition.
Mm.
And he wants to win first place.
Mm.
Right? And he really wants to win so bad.
Mm.
And it's his time to pull his bow and to shoot the arrow. And as he's pulling his bow, he looks at the trophy. He's like, that's going to look so nice on my shelf. And as he's looking at the trophy, he pulls the bow, lets the arrow go, and he misses. And the reason he missed was because he was so focused on the trophy that he forgot about the thing that will lead to him getting the trophy, right?
Yeah.
And this happens so often in entrepreneurship where people are so focused on the money that they forget that like money is something that will happen as a byproduct of the thing. But if you just focus on the money, a lot of the times what I see are companies that have great marketing.
Yeah.
Right? They have a great brand. And often on the back end, things don't kind of quite look like that because marketing, sales process, brand is the stuff that sells, right? And these are companies that are good at making money in the short term, but they're not companies that last for a long time.
Yeah.
Also, if you're selling one-to-one,
you've
done this a ton in your agency.
Mm-hmm.
If you're coming with hunger, it will repel people.
Yeah.
It will repel people because you have this needy energy that you're approaching them when it's like you're it's a taken energy.
Yes.
Everything shifted in my business the moment I started focusing on how to get my clients the best results possible. And when I did that, when I would show up on sales calls, it was not a taken energy. It was like, dude, yes, there's going to be an energy exchange in the form of money for the product that I'm selling you.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like I'm gifting you something. I want to help you. It's a giving energy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just shifting that intention. There's a great book that talks about this power versus force, right? Giving versus taking. Mm. And giving, any of these, like, he calls them, like, it's like an attractor feel that they tend to vibrate at higher levels.
Yeah.
They're going to be powerful. You're not going to need any energy. The only reason people resort to hard closes, sales tactics, countdown timers, things that are meant to force someone into buying, it's because they're not operating from that place of service.
Yeah.
And they literally have to force people to give them money. And
right.
It's very, very, very taken.
Right.
Yeah.
I had the biggest learning curve with that through two ways. I think my first one was working in my sales job. I remember, as I was working my sales job, that was also when I learned through my friend Elia, who's been on this podcast, about Hawkins' scale of consciousness and just the whole concept of he was introducing to me frequency and vibrating in a state of love. And then I personally went off and just decided to like watch a bunch of YouTube videos on Dr. Hawkins and realized he had some books. So Letting Go caught my eye and I read through that my first couple months living in New York. And I remember I actually released one of my, I think, best solo episodes maybe to date. And the episode of this is called like The Secret to Getting What You Want. So that was something I learned too, is like the less I try to force something, the more likely I actually got it. It's basically a double-edged sword. And I saw this in dating. I mean, I told one of my best friends this yesterday morning. I was like, hey, you know, like he's trying so hard to find a person, which he clearly is filling a void. And this parallel is in many areas of our life, right? When we try too hard for something in the sense of like, oh, I want a relationship right now, or I really want this deal, right? Or I really want this client. It causes that level of friction. And I was really young when I was in sales, so I didn't quite know at the time, but looking back, I know that I was definitely giving off a needy energy. And as I started to become more playful in my sales job, I would match the people's energy. I'd show up to this restaurant owner and, you know, she was kind of cool, like a little punk, and she would be like cursing up a storm. And I remember I would tell the story to my parents all the time. And I'm like, yeah, I matched her energy. She was saying like, fuck this and fuck Newsom. And I'm like, yeah, like F that too. And I ended up getting the deal, and she did not want to meet me in person. She was like, are you just another salesperson that's trying to like, you know, upgrade me to whatever? I'm like, no, I just am trying to come have a conversation with you. And to be honest, I was genuinely just doing that. I started like, you know me, I'm very playful. I'm an extremely playful person, and I just have a lot of fun. And to no surprise, I actually specifically, as I'm saying this, I thought about how I gave a keynote at my high school 2 weeks ago. And that's exactly what I said. I said that we're all focused on, oh, I think I want to be an accountant. I think I want to go study psychology. I think I want to become a nurse or PA or whatever. And it's always these titles. It's always the what. And I tell people, you know, from 18 to 22 is the easiest time, especially if you're lucky and you're going to school on a scholarship where your parents are helping you out. Use that time to play. That's literally what I did. And I feel like that's kind of what you're alluding to as well. Just like that guy, like who, you know, before he raises his bow and arrow, like he's not in that play mode, you know, he's so focused on the result versus just having fun. Like, you know, how we are in tennis, like I'm just there to have fun. Right. And because I'm not scared to lose, because the game of tennis is just so fun.
Miyamoto Musashi was a samurai who mm-hmm. wrote a book called The Book of Five Rings.
Mm.
And in the book, he has a quote that says, when you see the way in one thing, you see the way in everything.
Mm.
And as you bring up tennis, it's a sport that I picked up in September. And getting nice. What I've noticed is that when I take it seriously, my game is absolutely trash.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's absolute trash. But the moment I start having fun and I become more loose, and it's almost like I have access to, for lack of a better word, superpowers yeah. that I don't when I'm taking the game seriously.
Mm.
I have more control over where I want the ball to go,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's that lack of attachment.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, we were playing a board game,
mm-hmm.
which was super interesting, very mm-hmm. thought-provoking. And the game's supposed to reveal what's blocking you in life and give you insights on how to get unblocked,
mm-hmm.
so you can experience more flow and make the process of bringing your visions to life a little bit easier. And one of the cards that I got was attachment. And mm-hmm. I've been thinking about it ever since I got that card yesterday, because it is the thing that a lot of the times blocks me. Attachment to winning the game.
Mm-hmm.
Attachment to winning the game is like attachment to that trophy
yeah.
that we spoke about earlier.
Right.
Attachment to getting the sale.
Mm-hmm.
keeps you from bringing that playful energy.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, well, I got to get it. Now this it's serious.
Right, right.
Another person that's been coming up a lot lately, like four times, it's Alan Watts.
Mm.
And he has a great talk about the game of life. And he utilizes the game, the word game, intentionally. Because often we forget that it is a game.
Yeah.
And yeah. games are supposed to be fun. We're supposed to be playing them. They're mm-hmm. supposed to be playful.
Mm-hmm.
And we take the game seriously.
Yeah.
And the moment you take the game seriously, you've forgotten that
yeah.
it's a game. And you lose that lightheartedness, childlike spirit.
Yeah.
And often in my life, moments where I felt that I'm not aligned and my energy's a little bit off.
Mm-hmm.
is usually because I forget
mm.
that. I forget that it is all just a game, you know? And that's not to minimize the seriousness of it, because life, there's an element of life that is serious, and we need to put food on the table, and we have responsibilities that we have to tend to.
Mm-hmm.
But we could do it with a little smirk on our face, mm-hmm. right? Like, we laugh so much, you and I.
Yeah.
And I think it's cool because it brings that energy into things.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that comes from that lack of attachment. If you're so worried about getting the trophy, it actually reminds me of recently there was a great boxing match. Mm-hmm. It was Devin Haney versus Ryan Garcia.
Mm-hmm.
And Ryan Garcia kicked Devin Haney's ass, like absolutely destroyed him. But leading up to it, Devin Haney was every day posting, I'm waking up at 5 a.m. I'm training 5 times a day. I'm eating clean. I'm doing this. And he was like taking it like, super seriously. Whereas like Ryan took it more lighthearted. And after the fight, there was a meme that shows like Devin Haney doing all of these things.
Yeah.
And Ryan, he has this quote at the end of the fight where he's like, I just showed up, God did the rest. You know, like.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And of
power versus force.
Right. And of course, obviously, we're not saying that's not to say that there's, you know, work that Garcia does behind the scenes in order to like be able to show up at that level. Right. But it's like when it comes to performance time, which I'm so accustomed to as well, right? I remember at like Rockefeller this past season, which was really nerve-wracking at first because it was like the first time I performed in like, I guess not, I was going to say 8 years, but I did perform last year. But I think all that to say, to me, I forgot that like, you know, I'm just a kid on ice. And I think, I don't know if you feel like this, but, you know, having immigrant parents, they do take life a little bit more serious. And my mom especially definitely worries a lot more. And I laugh so much in the house that they literally think that there's something wrong with me. And then I'll tell them, you know, I'll tell them like, you know, I get it. We obviously had different life circumstances and, you know, for them, different circumstances that would make them more serious. But I always am like, you know, sometimes it's not that serious. Like, you don't have to worry about everything so much, right? And I don't know if it's partially like growing up and seeing that and then just ending up being the opposite, which is sometimes often what happens. But I noticed like that's actually kind of how a lot of things came into my life. I mean, I went to Medellin on a one-way ticket last June and I was like, you know what? Full send. Books the flight, you know? I mean, obviously I'm cognizant of like, okay, can I financially afford that? Like everyone knows I'm very mindful of those things, but all those in place, similar to Garcia, like, okay, all that training, all those years, you know, assuming all of that is correct, aligned, whatever, okay, then have fun. And I think that's funny when a lot of people ask me like, how do you get to this point? Or, you know, how do you get to these collaborations? How do you keep doing all this? And, you know, at the same time, we're just kids from Berks. If anyone knows, like Reading, Pennsylvania is, you know, Berks County, Lancaster County, Pennsylvania is a very small place.
Yeah.
Very small.
Tiny. Tiny. You know, you mentioned that it was by following your intuition that you said, hey, like, I'm going to go to Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a story there of, like, you overhearing something in a conversation.
You remember that, yeah.
Right? And I think this is also a great thing to keep in mind, mm-hmm. and that is that life is always trying to guide us. That's mm-hmm. something that I've noticed in my life. And if we're paying attention, there are clues. And the Alchemist, they refer to them as omens,
mm-hmm.
right? And omens, I think another quote for intuition is God's whispers guiding you where you're meant to go.
Mm.
Right? It's a beautiful way to think about intuition. But for me, following that mm-hmm. is a big part of what's led me to where I'm at today.
Mm-hmm.
And trusting that. And the thing about your intuition is that it's often leading you toward on a growth path.
Mm-hmm.
And that growth path is usually going to be scary.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be uncertain.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll take you in the ride of a lifetime. And mm-hmm. when I look back on my own journey following that and saying, hey, I'm going to do this thing, I'm going to do this other thing. It's like, and I look back and it's like, wow, like this almost seems scripted, right? Mm-hmm. And I know for you, following your intuition to go to Colombia brought so many great things into your life, and your life's totally different because of that trip, you know. So I'm glad you followed your intuition. I advise everybody that's listened to this, so
you know, it's
do that as well.
I think it's interesting. I think I've always been a very balanced, intuitive, and logical person. I think I also lead my life with a lot of, and it's funny because my friend Adriana said this about me too. When she met me solo traveling in Milan, she repeated that a couple of weeks ago. She's like, you know, when I met you, I could tell you have a lot of fearlessness, you know? And it's the same thing I noticed when my friends are like, oh, like, you never been to South America. Like, how were you down to just go by yourself? And I think it's just a practice, a muscle of saying yes or going for it, even when you are unsure of the outcome. Obviously, that led me, for longtime listeners who've been listening since before last summer, know that I ended up going back to Medellin, Colombia, for the rest of summer. And I didn't tell my parents. but one of those things where, again, assuming other practical aspects of life are lined up, I'm more often than not, or maybe almost nearly 100% of the time, will say yes. Just because, I don't know, I came from such a small town in Pennsylvania that I've always known that there's more to the world, you know? Obviously, there were other good reasons why I came back and lived in Colombia for the rest of summer, but
I'm curious, what made you want to come back?
Oh, you know, it was, you know, on that one-way trip, met a guy. And it was funny because I ended up finding out that he's actually from the same part of Pennsylvania as I am, which is crazy, right? Like, wow. Coming from a town of like 10,000 people, or at least my part of town is 10,000, but like the greater part is maybe 20,000. But anyways, coming from a town that's small, and then you meet a guy from that same part of, you know, PA, where you grew up, in another country, I mean, that's so fascinating. And then, you know, we clicked. We actually ended up going on a trip to Cartagena after knowing each other for a couple of days. So just imagine, like, you know, and that's why I actually always tell girls, if you don't feel drawn to a second date or to see that person again after a first date, save yourself the time. Respect that person's time. Just say no. But anyways, I mean, so obviously any guy listening to this is like, well, damn, if my girl isn't flying over to the country for me, now the standard's raised high. But I mean, yeah.
He sounds like a catch. Sounds like
a great guy. Yeah, I mean, it puts
a very bright smile on your face.
Yeah, I mean, I did go back to Colombia for the dude, and now we're dating. Oh. Yeah, it's a beautiful story. But I want to kind of, in our last few questions, I think we talked a lot about business and how we've more or less just designed our life around, I think, with the forefront of entrepreneurship and kind of being able to pick and choose the flavors and the base and kind of just like starting to make food because I'm clearly hungry. But something that I do realize from a third eye's view is that some people go, okay, there's business, there's learning to make your first few hundred dollars and then your first couple thousand, but then how have you created a sustainable business, one that you actually live off of? That's like the next tier. Obviously, I think just before you answer, I know that for myself, parting ways with Elite Skatewear from my leading business was because I didn't want to deal with a product-based business, especially a custom product-based business. And that's when I started thinking about service. And I remember hearing other people create a similar type of business as mine that I now have. And I was like, oh, wow, I could do that as well. So I think that was kind of my other takeaway. And the reason why I was able to create a sustainable business is because I recognize, okay, if I have X amount of clients charged at X amount on a monthly retainer, this is what I'm going to bring in consistently monthly, right? So I think that's for me how I logically have calculated it. But how have you built that? And any piece of advice for entrepreneurs who are now at that stage?
I mean, I could go in so many different directions with answers to this question.
Mm-hmm.
Is the question more so around how did I get the business to a point where it supports me and my lifestyle, or just in terms of scaling in general?
I think probably the first, the former. I think just in the sense of how do you make it sustainable? Because some businesses maybe do 1,000 in 1 month.
Yeah,
they do 10,000 the next month, right? that's also normal for different types of businesses, right? And I explained my process was trying to simplify, kind of almost as if it's like a monthly salary mm-hmm. from my service-based business. But everyone has a different process.
I think for most solopreneurs, sub seven-figure entrepreneurs, the big question to answer is, okay, like where do you need to get to have the lifestyle that you want after right. taxes? It starts with doing that math,
mm-hmm.
you know?
You can write off those dinners, though. I'm kidding.
it starts with doing that math and then backtracking, you know? But I think a different answer that I think might be a little bit more helpful mm-hmm. and how I thought about it is what big problem can I solve for mm-hmm. a business or a person
mm-hmm.
with my current skill set
mm-hmm.
that without having to work with a ton of people, because I never wanted to do that,
yeah,
will allow me to hit this number. The reason I go to big problem is that big problems are usually solving big problems usually lead to big paychecks. For me it was answering that question, then creating that offer, and then building the whole business, which I mean, like that's a 3-4 year journey,
yeah.
you know. But I think for me, it goes back to that same insight that we had back in the day: is do good work,
mm-hmm.
and then show others that you do good work. I think it's a very simple marketing strategy,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Business strategy: do good work, show other people that mm-hmm. you do good work, and then you scale the showing, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can go into marketing strategies, ads, yeah. all of these things. To me, early on, both of the businesses
mm-hmm.
that were successful,
mm-hmm.
that I've started early on, they started very grassroots. I was not running ads to get clients. Mm-hmm. I was not doing anything fancy. I was going to where the people that I wanted to work with, mm-hmm. where those people were at.
Mm-hmm.
I was developing relationships.
Yes.
I was leading with value.
Yeah.
And then having conversations about, hey, here, I think you're doing this thing.
Mm-hmm.
I see that you're struggling with this. I could help you with this specific thing.
Yeah.
Are you interested in learning more about it? But it always, like both businesses always started with going where those people were already mm-hmm. hanging out at.
Yeah.
When I moved down to Miami, I knew I wanted to connect with entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
So I joined WeWork. And I went on Eventbrite and I started joining like local entrepreneur events and meeting people. And a hack that I will give people, because I'm not a huge, I'm more on the introverted side.
Yeah.
I don't love going to networking events. But what I've been really good at
mm-hmm.
in my life is finding connectors. And connectors are those bright people you see at a networking event. They know everybody. They're smiling. They're the last person to leave the event.
Mm-hmm.
That's not me. But I've been really good at developing relationships with those people. You know, like they are really, really good at opening doors and connecting you with other people.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really focus on connecting with everybody. This sounds a little bit calculated.
Yeah.
It kind of is. It is a strategy. I do say, okay, like who are the people here
mm-hmm.
that know the people here? Let me connect with that person. Yeah.
It's interesting as you share that, I think about too, you know, I got my foot in the door with a bunch of hotels that I now work with from my agency, all because, as I shared with you yesterday, of an influencer partnerships day I was doing in New York before I moved here at a hotel. And the person who was managing, you know, like my room stay and everything, she happened to be also a Delta Gamma, which is my sorority when I was in college, and she's like 20 years older than me. And for some people, being sorority, sisterhood, whatever, that runs deep. She saw that on my LinkedIn and immediately wanted to get coffee. And I was like, amazing. I took that opportunity right off the bat to pitch her and ask her, who's doing all of these hotels, marketing, and et cetera. And at the time, they're like a super small hospitality group. And I mean, they still don't have anything in-house. And to be fair, I think sometimes businesses like that shouldn't have that in-house. But they should strategically partner with someone like me who manages it. But that's literally how it happened, is I am lucky to be in an industry in like media, podcasting, as a content creator and in my social media agency, they all overlap. There's a lot of PR involved. There's a lot of like the cities involved in it are, you know, often in the US, New York, LA, Miami. I've lived in all. And so I think when you're able to find industries or things that you enjoy that overlap like that, it enhances your experience, because then it's not hard for me to be at events where I can meet people that I pitched on my podcast. What do? I often actually then, you know, if they have a business or if they are related to a hotel or whatever, I'm often pitching on the spot, you know. Or recently, owner of a yoga studio, I pitched her the What Fulfills You card game to go into their yoga studio, right? So I'm very lucky, but I designed it that way. I knew that these industries overlap. And for me, that's how I've been able to like grow on all of these, when it doesn't take as much energy if they were separate, like one's in a completely separate, they work in tandem. So I like what you shared there.
Yeah, like you don't have a tanning studio and then like a restaurant.
Right, exactly, exactly. Okay, well, final question I obviously ask everyone on the show. It takes a lot of self-awareness and a lot of personal time to kind of look inward, to do the work, as they say, which I've done. And I think that's what has been able to push me towards creating this platform, creating this podcast. But for you, I know you also do a lot of personal development work. In reflecting on everything in your journey, what would you say ultimately fulfills you in life?
It's the people in my life. You know, it's my family, it's my friends, and luckily, it's my clients. And I think that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
That the thing that I do for a living brings so much joy to my heart. And you've seen it. I could have 4 or 5 calls in a day. And because it's with those people, yeah, sure, like there's a lot of energy that was spent. But at the end of the day, I'm happy and often mm-hmm. have more energy than when I started the day. You know, money's cool, things are cool. But this brings up a memory of when I started my first business. I chased, I used the word chase intentionally, this $10,000 a month for over a year. And I sacrificed so much to achieve this. I sacrificed certain people in my life, certain relationships. When I remember the day that I reached that number and my Stripe account crossed 10K for the month, I was super happy for a second. And there was this huge, very deep feeling of emptiness, because I didn't know like who to share it with.
Mm.
Like, sure, I knew I could call my mom and like share it with her, but it's like, I don't know, I didn't have anybody in that time to go and grab a beer with to like celebrate this or anything.
Mm.
And later that day, something happened and I got pissed off. And I realized, oh, wow, like this thing that you prioritized, it was so fleeting.
Mm-hmm.
The feeling of achieving that and getting that. And that's when I really started prioritizing community and developing relationships and having somebody to go hang out with after work for dinner, mm-hmm. you know? And funny enough, when I did that, it brought such good energy into my life that my business started to grow even faster, you know? But long answer to a short question, it's the people in my life.
I love it. Where can everyone find you if they want to stalk your Insta? Don't slide into them, kidding. No, where can everyone find you on Insta, your website, potentially if they want to work with you, if they're a creator, aspiring coach, what may have you, where can they find you?
Instagram is the best place to find me. Abraham Casillas. I read and reply to every message, so don't be shy.
And that was all for today's episode with Abraham Casillas. As always, if you enjoyed the episode, please be sure to share this with a friend, post it on your Instagram story, and if you do, tag both of us at What Fulfills You, at Emily E. Duong, and at Abraham Casillas. If you are a content creator, a coach, or you're kind of dabbling in that space in some way and you are learning to make money on the side or utilize your knowledge and expertise in whatever that may be, and you want to learn how to grow online in the digital sphere, definitely check out Abraham. He does have a lot of free, helpful content, guides, what have you. So definitely check it out. All of the links are in the bio. And again, I just want to thank you guys for being such amazing listeners, for tuning into the podcast every week or whenever you tune in. It really means the world to me, and I'm excited to continue to share more as we're all on this personal development journey together. Thanks again for tuning in. I will chat with y'all in the next episode.